This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tech products for the teleworkers. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your holiday weekend with us. Coming up this hour, even those who've been working from home for years can improve their workspaces or make them more entertaining. We'll name some products to consider. Also, with July 4th cookouts in mind this weekend, a food safety expert has tips on preparing, serving, and storing your burgers and potato salad. Plus, a look at facts about Independence Day that you may not have known, such as the president whose death is tied to a July 4th celebration. And scoring a break on college tuition just by asking.
Well, the pandemic has given families more leverage to bargain for tuition discounts when they are getting their offers from schools. This was actually a trend that had been going on before the pandemic, so this is a pre-existing trend that the pandemic has accelerated.
Josh Mitchell at the Wall Street Journal on how the coronavirus pandemic has improved our bargaining position with colleges. Well, before Memorial Day, the majority of coronavirus cases were found in people 45 and older, but now the opposite is true. Jamie Frazier, reporter at USA Today, has been crunching new data. Jamie, what are we learning?
Since Memorial Day, the proportion of new positive tests has gone up in people under 45. And in general, people, the younger they are, the growth rate in the number of positive tests is growing more rapidly. For instance, you know, people 18 to 44 have seen a 70% increase in positive tests, whereas folks 45 to 64 have only seen a 47% increase.
So it seems like from some of the data that it's the seniors who are being really cautious at this point because their numbers are not spiking in this manner, correct?
Yeah, that's one theory. You know, there could be multiple factors at play, and you know, the details will vary from place to place because we all know, you know, a town in New Jersey is a little different than a town in Florida, is a little different than a town in Arizona. But, you know, there are either increased and continued diligence from older Americans to follow safety precautions, while younger Americans might be less likely to wear masks or self-isolate. The other possibility is that outbreaks in nursing homes might be better controlled now than they were earlier in the pandemic. We might also be seeing, you know, a difference in how we're testing. You know, earlier on when tests were limited, we concentrated our limited testing supplies to vulnerable populations and to people who are showing symptoms, who tended to be older. But now that testing is more widespread and there's an increased push in communities to you know, test at workplaces and test people who may not be showing symptoms, we might be showing more young people in those results. But in most places in the country, from the data that we've looked at, it's not just a result of increased testing. It's clearly a result of younger people being infected more often.
We're speaking with Jamie Frazier, investigative and data reporter at USA Today. She's written a piece about how young people now have become a factor in this surge of COVID-19 cases. Initially, when I saw the headline, I thought, well, God bless them, right? Like somebody said in your story, these are the young and the invincibles. Is that necessarily the case?
Yeah, there's, and everyone can share anecdotes of driving past a bar and seeing it packed with, you know, people you presume that are in their 20s and 30s, and they're maybe not wearing masks. Certainly in the story, we quoted a couple of young women who went to a DJ night in Arizona and were one of the only people wearing masks. And the bouncer at the door handed them a mask and said, "We have to give you this, but you don't have to wear it." Mm. So And there have been some local outbreaks tied to risky behaviors like that, but there could be other factors at play too, right? Like young people might feel more comfortable returning to work, and some of these could be workplace exposures.
Finish up with what the one health director, I think it was Stanislaus County, California, said. You can't necessarily tie these problems to a particular place.
Yeah, so Dr. Washington or Dr. V had said that, you know, early in the pandemic, it was easy to, you know, tie 100 cases to, you know, a food processing facility or to a nursing home. They were concentrated in a place where people were packed tightly together, couldn't or weren't taking proper precautions, or just had higher risk of exposure. But now, as they're doing contact tracing, it's hard to pinpoint where the infection happened, because people are saying, well, I went to the grocery store and then I had dinner at a restaurant with these friends, and we went for, you know, a walk in this crowded park, or we participated in protests. And so in general, more people are having more opportunities to become infected, but also to infect others, which makes it harder to say that, it, you know, we just need better policies at a particular type of place. And what she said is, it's really important that people take individual responsibility for their behaviors, because those can have much larger consequences in the community.
There's Jamie. Jamie Fraser, investigative and data reporter at USA Today.
For streaming, creating, gaming, and more, power your passions for less during Dell's Exceptional Cyber Savings event. Enjoy up to $400 off stunning laptops like the XPS, along with high-performance desktops and next-level Alienware systems, redefining what's possible with 10th-gen Intel Core processors. Shop special prices on top-brand electronics and accessories, plus enjoy free shipping on everything. Don't forget to ask for Intel when you call 800-BUY-DELL. That's 800-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for spending part of your holiday weekend with us. The coronavirus pandemic has accelerated a years-long shift in bargaining power away from colleges and toward families, which are quite prepared to treat tuition as they would a car's price, something to haggle over. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
When it comes to higher education, bargaining power is shifting away from colleges and universities and toward families. Josh Mitchell has written about this shift for the Wall Street Journal and joins us now. Josh, what did you find out about tuition?
Well, the pandemic has given families more leverage to bargain for tuition discounts when they are getting their offers from schools. This was actually a trend that had been going on before the pandemic. So this is a pre-existing trend that the pandemic has accelerated, but basically schools are in a tight position right now. They are expecting a possible enrollment decline. One reason, for example, is fewer international students are going to be going to schools next year. Families are more price conscious. They've either lost jobs or their businesses. If they own businesses, their businesses have been hurt by the pandemic. And so right now you have this normal negotiation process that happens between families and schools, and families find themselves in a better position now to argue for reduced tuition.
Josh, are we talking about mostly private schools, or does this encompass some public universities as well?
Both. We are talking mostly about private schools, but this type of negotiation process is increasingly happening at public schools. And the context here is that for years and years, mostly private schools have turned to consultants to determine how much parents are able and willing to pay. And so one of the things that's been happening for a while now is schools will collect a lot of data on prospective students. This data includes, you know, sex, race, where they live, you know, the exact address of where they live, whether their parents are college graduates or not. And this is in addition to what their, you know, SAT scores are and what their high school GPA is. And then they send that data to consultants who then crunch the numbers and come up with an algorithm to determine how much the next year's class will be willing to pay. And this is how schools for a while now, particularly private schools, have come up with individual discounts for different students to, again, extract the most money they can. They're trying to figure out how willing and how able you are to pay. Public colleges are now getting into this, because public colleges you know, some of them are struggling, and so they need to figure out, you know, how can they extract the most money from the next year's freshman class. And the schools will say, look, this is not just for us to, you know, make money. This is also for us to determine, you know, which students need the most financial aid. But there's, you know, several things going on here. They do want to obviously maximize the money they're making, and they also want to determine how to help students that need the help the most.
We are speaking with Josh Mitchell of the Wall Street Journal. Josh, obviously things are rather chaotic in the world right now, including what will happen in the fall or even in August when colleges open up again. How far are families going in deciding or not deciding to enroll?
Well, so that's a good question, because one of the things that's going on this year is there was a consent decree between the Justice Department and one of the main trade groups for colleges that was signed late last year. And basically that consent decree said that colleges are now able to recruit students beyond May 1. There used to be this hard deadline where if a student had committed to a school, then other competing schools could not dangle offers if it was beyond May 1. Well, that industry rule has now been scrapped, which means there are a lot of students who have, even right now, have not committed to a school, whereas in prior years they would have done so by now. And so you're seeing a lot of bargaining and negotiation between families and schools go on far later in the year than we would see in prior years. And, you know, some of the consultants for these families that I've talked to, you know, are saying this could go on for another few months, because I think there is a lot of uncertainty. And I think, you know, families, not only are they, you know, trying to bargain lower tuition, they're also trying to decide whether they're going to send their kids to school or whether their adult children are going to go to school, given that they don't know if their campuses are going to be open. They don't know what the experience is going to be like. So there is still a lot of uncertainty.
That is Wall Street Journal reporter Josh Mitchell with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. 21 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. Even if you're a veteran of working from home, the lockdown orders can still be frustrating. However, tech analyst Rob Enderle has identified several technology products that have been especially helpful while he's sheltering in place, making stay-home orders feel less like a punishment and more like something he could endure. Rob set this up.
The question isn't just working at home for a long time. The problem is that you just stay in the house, and so all you're seeing is your spouse, and that's about it for long periods of time. And so you know you have habits where you like to go to car shows and some of the other stuff. Haven't been able to do any of that stuff. So it's easy to kind of feel like you're locked up and you're being punished. So I certainly understand people wanting to get out and about. But the things that have kind of helped me keep my sanity, one of them, and one that really stands out, is the Atmoph Window 2, spelled A-T-M-O-P-H, Window 2. And what it is it's a window to different locations. It's a 4K display, a 27-inch display. You hang on the wall like a picture, but it connects over the Internet to remote cameras that are located all over the world. So sometimes I'll be looking at a scene from Paris, looking at a scene from London, looking at a scene from New York. And then depending on your settings, that is updated it, so now it switches about every 30 minutes to something new. And sometimes it's fireworks going off some other place in the world. It kind of gives you a sense you can just sit there and look at it. It kind of feels a little like you're there. And it's just, you know, normal people going by, scenes, boats, whatever the scene is. That might be a beach surf, and it's got sound as well if you want to experience.
Oh, wow.
The local sound, but it allows me to kind of sit back and kind of feel like I'm traveling virtually, even when I'm home. Now, I think they could do a lot of things better. Now that I've got it, I'd kind of like to have a 40-incher that takes place of one of the windows. But it's not bad, and it just kind of allows me to settle and feel less cooped up.
How about this chilly Uller?
Yeah, I was just talking to a friend about this the other day. She's having trouble sleeping. She likes it cooler than her husband does. I'm the exact opposite way. I like it cooler than my wife does. And what the Uller does is it uses technology very similar to what they've developed for race car drivers and astronauts, which circulates chilled or heated water in a mattress pad, keeping you either warm or cool, depending on what it is you want to do. And because it's water, you don't have to worry about electrical fields, which is often a problem with electric blankets. Plus, electric blankets can't cool you as well as heat you. So what I find is it helps me sleep. And once again, in it's easy, particularly with the current political situation, to have trouble sleeping. Then it gets in the summer, it gets hot. Your wife is cold, or your spouse is cold, or vice versa. And getting that temperature right for both of you typically means one of you is making sacrifices, and this removes the sacrifice. It's not a cheap date. For a king-size bed, it's going to cost you somewhere around $2,000, but to me, the value of just being able to sleep comfortably and not waking up either too hot and sweaty or freezing my hoo-ha's off, yeah, is a heck of a benefit for this particular technology. I had their previous product, chiller product, and the chili pad, and the this one's better. They've improved it so it works off your smartphone. A much bigger cooler. It's more robust. And one caveat, if you do get this, do not put tap water in it. Use only distilled water, because if you use tap water, it evaporates out, and it leaves all those deposits that are in tap water, and it'll eventually cause the machine to fail. So if you use distilled water, it lasts indefinitely.
Good insight. We're speaking with Rob Enderle, founder of The Enderle Group. He's written a piece for TechNewsWorld.com called Tech Products That Make It Easier to Stay Home. All right, for the gamers, I know you attracted some attention with the AMD Threadripper PC. What is this?
Oh, this thing is just awesome. I got this thing from AMD, of course, sent it to me, but it's built by Falcon Northwest. And it is just an awesome machine. The 32 cores... it allows me to multitask. I can have a video going on one side. If you looked above it in my article, I'm also talking about a 49-inch monitor from Dell that gives me the real estate to do all this stuff. But I can have a video going on, or our chat going on, or a conference going on one part of the screen, work going on the other part of the machine, and this PC handles that complete load.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal and founder of The Enderle Group. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending part of your Independence Day weekend with us. Coming up this half hour, how to keep your food safe all summer long. Also, farewell old school money principles. Plus, lockdowns are lifting, and guess what? The clothes don't fit the same anymore. And surprising 4th of July facts. We'll have that list in about 20 minutes. Every year, millions of us celebrate the 4th of July by sizzling hot dogs, hamburgers, chicken, and other American classics on the grill, right? This holiday weekend might not be like years past. So while we keep public health recommendations in mind, let's not forget food safety practices to prevent foodborne illnesses, commonly known as food poisoning. Some of those practices from Meredith Carruthers, food safety expert at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Meredith, what do you recommend?
Yes, so we have four food safety steps that we recommend all year long, but especially for this 4th of July holiday, knowing that it's probably going to be pretty warm, people outside enjoying their time and enjoying the weather. So our four food safety steps that we're really recommending to follow this 4th of July are clean, separate, cook, and chill. Clean means that you'll be starting with clean hands, utensils, surfaces as much as possible. If you're going to be outside or somewhere where running in clean water isn't necessarily easily accessible, using something like a moist towelette or a hand sanitizer with about 60% alcohol content is going to be a great alternative to keep your hands safe and clean while you're preparing food, after you're preparing food, etc. For our separate step, we're really recommending to keep your raw meat and poultry products away from your ready-to-eat and cooked foods. That's going to prevent cross-contamination from happening in between your raw and your cooked products and your ready-to-eat products. For our cooked step, we're really encouraging consumers to use a food thermometer as much as possible, because a food thermometer is going to make sure that your product is cooked to a safe internal temperature high enough to kill any of that foodborne illness bacteria. And lastly, for our chill step, for our 4th of July celebrations this summer, this weekend, it's going to be a few different things to keep in mind with the chill step. Before you're cooking and before you're getting everything out and ready to eat, make sure you keep your perishables in a cooler or in a refrigerator somewhere to keep those items nice and cold and at a safe temperature before they're getting out into the warmer summer heat. After you've, you know, put those items out, watch the time. You only have about 2 hours or 1 hour if it's above 90 degrees Fahrenheit for those products to remain safe. And then after you're done eating, same thing with that 2 hour or 1 hour rule, depending on how hot it is, getting those products back into the cooler, back into the refrigerator, not letting them stay out for too long. So following those four steps is going to be a great way to protect yourself and remain safe from foodborne illness this holiday.
Yeah, I didn't realize the clock was ticking that way. Do you get the sense that there will be more people actually grilling this holiday weekend because we're home? We may be less likely to attend somebody else's backyard cookout?
It's very possible. So while the gatherings may not be as large or as out in the public as they usually are, I think we are kind of anticipating people to take advantage of their backyard and using a grill, or even going camping or going, you know, somewhere where it's a little more isolated from other people, which, you know, there's definitely ways to do those safely. It's just, you know, keeping those in mind to make sure that no matter where you're celebrating 4th of July this year, whether it's in your backyard with a grill or out at a campsite with a grill, that you're staying safe and making sure that you're following those steps.
We're speaking with Meredith Carruthers, food safety expert at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, talking about keeping your food safe during the summer as you prepare it or serve it outside. What do you find is the biggest offense that a lot of us commit?
Yep. So one of the biggest offenses is probably leaving your food out for way too long. It's very easy to get caught up in the celebrations, get caught up in the event or the, you know, fun that you're having when you're around other people or when you're grilling your foods this summer. So it's really important to focus on the time and to, you know what temperature it is outside as well. Because like I mentioned, if it's over 90 degrees Fahrenheit, you really only have 1 hour before bacteria can multiply to dangerous levels. So setting a timer on your phone or on your smartwatch or something is going to be a great way to remind you to not let your stuff stay out for so long. So it's one of the biggest things that people fall victim to in the summer, especially when they're out and about having these outdoor gatherings, is the food staying out for way too long.
Thanks, Meredith. Meredith Carruthers, food safety expert at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. By the way, recent USDA research found only 1/3 of Americans keep hot dogs warm after cooking. Speaking of hot dogs, Meredith prefers ketchup and relish on hers. I asked her that separately, and I'm sorry. Ketchup is a useless condiment unless you're mixing with horseradish. It's 21 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend. Happy July 4th weekend. You know those timeless financial principles you heard long ago? Well, sometimes they don't age so well. Jonathan Clements, founder of the financial website HumbleDollar.com, has some examples. Jonathan, your thoughts?
Gordon, I've been writing about this stuff for, I hate to admit it, 35 years now. And so much has changed over those 35 years. For instance, one of the things that was prevalent in the 1980s was hunting for the next star mutual fund manager. And the archetype of that was, of course, Fidelity Magellan's Peter Lynch. You know, if you didn't have money invested with Lynch, you were on the search for the person who's going to be the next Peter Lynch. Mm-hmm. You know, people look to past performance and simply extrapolated it into the future. And yet, you know, as we've since learned, you know, past performance is no guide to future results.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if you've got a guy who seems to have been successful in the past, it's almost impossible to tell whether he was lucky or whether he truly is skillful. And by the time you decide that he is actually skillful, he's probably got so much money under management that he couldn't possibly repeat his old record.
Well, yeah, true.
So, you know, the old search for the star fund manager, that's gone out the window, and it's really driven the growth of indexing.
What do you mean by broken yardsticks as another one of these kind of tools that's fallen by the wayside?
So again, back in the late 1980s, there was a fixation on valuations in the market, and that's really continued since then. But what's happened is stock market valuations have broken out of their historical range and headed skyward, and it's completely changed the story to the point where even if you track market valuations, and I do, it doesn't tell you anything about short-term performance, and it may not even tell you anything about long-term performance. So let me just give you a quick example. There was a rule of thumb that you could take 20 minus the inflation rate, and that would give you the market's PE. Well, if you did that today, you know, you would get a market PE of 18 or 19, but right now the market's price earnings ratio is 27.
Jeez.
And similarly, you know, dividend yields, so-called Shiller PE, you know, cyclically adjusted price earnings ratios, all of those indicate that the market is hugely expensive, but it has for years. So following those market valuations would not have helped you. If it led you to bail out of stocks, you would have missed the huge run we've had in stock prices over the last 10 years.
Man, we're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece called Breaking the Rules, and it's about those timeless financial principles that haven't aged so well. You referenced, too, lost love for loans. What's happened there?
So when I was starting out in the mid-'80s, one of the pieces of advice you heard, which actually I always thought was a little bit dubious, but the piece of advice you heard was take out the largest mortgage possible. You know, it's the cheapest debt you're ever going to get. The mortgage is going to be tax deductible. You'll be so happy come April 15th. But the fact is, one, the mortgage interest tax deduction has been severely impaired. Only about 10% of people itemize their tax deductions these days. And even those who itemize their tax deductions, often those itemized deductions are barely above their standard deduction. And what that means is they're getting little or no value from all the mortgage interest that they pay. And as a consequence, paying down that mortgage is often a far better investment than going out and buying high-quality corporate bonds. It's certainly better than buying treasury bonds. So the whole idea that you want the largest mortgage possible, it just isn't good advice anymore. Instead, you really actually want to take a small mortgage, and if you have money in bonds or cash investments, often the right strategy is to sell those and use them to pay ahead on your mortgage.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com. It is 13 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend.
For streaming, creating, gaming, and more, power your passions for less during Dell's Exceptional Cyber Savings event. Enjoy up to $400 off stunning laptops like the XPS, along with high-performance desktops and next-level Alienware systems, redefining what's possible with 10th-gen Intel Core processors. Shop special prices on top-brand electronics and accessories, plus enjoy free shipping on everything. Don't forget to ask for Intel when you call 800-BUY-DELL. That's 800-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. If you're like many Americans, you spent the spring sheltering at home in sweatpants, perhaps perfecting banana bread recipes as well. Most of us escaped COVID-19, but not the COVID-15, what people are calling the quarantine weight gain, pushing Americans into roomier wardrobes just as lockdowns lift in some areas. Here are some of their stories from Suzanne Kapner, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Suzanne, what are you hearing?
Well, you know, as people were forced to shelter at home over the past few months, they just became less active. You know, they couldn't get to their gym. You know, they were juggling childcare and housework and trying to work from home. A lot of people just, you know, didn't have time to exercise or go for walks. And also they were stress eating, you know, just snacking on, loading up on carbohydrates and snack food and cakes and candies, you know, as a way to kind of make themselves feel better. Plus, I think as a hobby, a lot of people also start baking. So they were just eating a lot more and exercising a lot less, and that turned out to that really helped them pack on the pounds.
I'm pretty sure that 12-year-old boy that you quoted at the beginning of the story has been in timeout for 4 weeks now, when he said, Mom, you need smaller thighs to wear those pants or something that she
put on. Yeah. I don't think, that was the nicest thing to say to his mother, but he's just being honest, right?
Right.
Kids can be brutally honest sometimes.
What were some of these anecdotes that folks shared with you? Shock, I guess.
You know, one woman, when she finally put on her pants, couldn't zip them up. So that made her decided to, you know, forced her to get on the scale. And she realized she'd gained 11 pounds in 3 weeks. Another guy gained 30 pounds during the lockdown. And, he sent me a before and after picture, and he looked very different. You almost couldn't recognize him. It was quite shocking.
Was this the guy with the beard who was wearing like a pair of medium shorts, and he's now like an extra large or something?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You must have gotten some funny pictures submitted.
Yes, definitely. People weren't shy, surprisingly, about sharing. One woman, she's going to her son's wedding in a few days, and she had to go buy a dress. you know, and this was sort of, she bought the dress only recently and once stores had reopened. So she had to go up a size and then she had to have the dress taken out even further. It was still too tight, you know. So these are not fun things.
You know, I thought on a serious note too, for some folks who've experienced layoffs perhaps, who suddenly have clothes that don't fit, how do you afford a new wardrobe?
Well, you know, and interestingly, a lot of people I talk to, they're sort of holding off on buying a whole new wardrobe. They're hoping that the weight will come off.
Thanks, Suzanne. Suzanne Kapner, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. By the way, Suzanne also reports that Google searches for elastic waist spiked in recent weeks. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Interesting 4th of July facts from parade.com. Number one, the Declaration of Independence was not signed on July 4, 1776. That's actually the day it was formally adopted by the Continental Congress. It wasn't signed by most until August. Number two, John Adams believed that American independence should be celebrated on July 2, as that's the actual day the Continental Congress voted for independence in 1776. Number three, Americans typically eat 150 million hot dogs on Independence Day. The National Hot Dog and Sausage Council, who knew there was such a thing, right, says that's enough to stretch from D.C. to L.A. more than five times. Fact number four, three presidents have died on July 4, Jefferson, John Adams, James Monroe. Number five, Massachusetts became the first state to make the 4th of July an official state holiday in 1781. President Zachary Taylor died in 1850 after eating spoiled fruit at a July 4 celebration. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.